dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Frank is out today. This is his producer, Nick, filling in. We're joined today by Diana West. She's a nationally syndicated columnist and the author, most recently, of American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character.
Great to be with you.
You too. There's lots of interesting stuff happening today. I wanted to start quickly with the State Department did release a 2014 report on the state of the war on terror. You mentioned on your blog, you know, the irony of reducing, of course, the war on terror itself is a debatable use of words to describe something, but reducing all jihad down to the words al-Qaeda. I've read threat assessments that used to be posted on the White House website that, you know, from years ago that didn't mention at all Hezbollah, for example, Hezbollah's presence in Latin America. We could go on and on. And Diana, in your assessment, did the State Department come clean with just how bad it is and just how strong al-Qaeda is globally in their franchisement across several continents?
Well, I think it's this notion that we are talking about al-Qaeda and franchises thereof that is really comes through screaming at me. You note that the absence of jihad from any sort of discussion of the terror threat is a part of this report. And in a sense, the absolute sort of almost surgical elimination of Islam, of jihad, of the animating role it plays in creating these various terrorist groups across continents, across cultures, that the report actually does discuss, is, I think, affecting the analysts' ability to figure out what the heck is going on. And what I mean by that is in their executive summary, they can't seem to comprehend why it could be that having successfully targeted certain key leaders of these, quote, al-Qaeda groups, core groups, and related groups, the movement continues, and these groups continue to decentralize, as they put it, and in a sense sprout franchises, even though the leaders, the masterminds, as they might conceive of it, are gone. And this is what happens when you surgically remove the concept of Islamic jihad as the animating feature of the terrorism. And so you are looking at sort of the jumbled brain attempt to make sense of something without all the key facts, or without the key fact in this case. And so you have a terrorism report, the 2014 terrorism report, State Department lists the groups that the United States has designated foreign terrorist organizations. And that is where that's the only place really in the report where you actually see the word Islam appear, or various, not just cognates, but related terms like Hezbollah, Party of Allah, etc. But the names of the groups that include the word Islam or related terms. And this, however, does not enter into the analysis. And so we have absolutely no chance of getting our arms around it or understanding it. And indeed, when you see the analysis of the State Department and sort of figuring out, well, gee, we got rid of the masterminds, why is this continuing? Again, no sense of what is animating this violence.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was at a briefing last night, a closed briefing, with a State Department official from this administration who did a lot of work in Africa. And, you know, people should know, like, we criticize a lot. The State Department is chock full of very, very smart, very, very capable people. There's a sort of a problem that a young analyst in Washington, D.C. has. We get all these great people that have lived in foreign places and they speak the language and understand the culture. But in conducting foreign policy, you know, there has to be someone with some competence and expertise that understands grand strategy. And Diana, as you explain so well and so often, you know, in war, you know, the grand part of the strategy are the ideas. So I think you quite well crystallized the pigeonholing of those things and the missing link that brings it all together. I want to jump over now to old Joe McCarthy. I think Frank is probably the biggest Victor Davis Hanson fan I've ever met. You seem to have written, to go quite into the details, splitting hairs about, you know, what Joe McCarthy means in the history of our culture. As an aside note, the premise for what Diana has written on this, or Victor Davis Hanson wrote about, you know, sort of just the ridiculous, unmedicated comments we keep hearing from Harry Reid. I don't like to be political, and let's be honest, in this country, Democrats are much better at making Republicans look idiotic than vice versa. But I mean, I would be just so embarrassed to hear Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi speak, you know, on a basis of lucidity to begin with. But I digress. We're going to get into Joe McCarthy. I was talking to Diana before, and folks, I want to break this down so you can really take what I say with a grain of salt. I have written what I thought was extensively on a character named Elizabeth Bentley, who was the handler for tens and tens of spies during World War II and thereafter. There have been since released, at the cooling of the Cold War, we now know that during the McCarthy era, there were, in fact, many, many, many Soviet spies in the top echelons of the U.S. government. These are not a matter of debate anymore. These are facts, and Diana has written on it much, much more extensively. My quick take on Joe McCarthy, I do conclude, and this is a topic where you do need a lot of background, I still conclude that he did a disservice to the country in his handling of the hearings on Soviet spies, but I'd like to give a little bit of background quickly. Kim Philby was the head of British counterintelligence. He was also a Soviet spy and the close confidant of Jim Angleton, the head of U.S. Soviet counterintelligence. So the British had a spy way up at the top with whom Jim Angleton shared intelligence at the time that we had caught and turned the spy, Elizabeth Bentley, who was a handler, and in American counterintelligence, once the CIA gets wind of these things, we move the case over to the FBI to build a case. So we had Elizabeth Bentley, we were building a case against a lot of the spies in the U.S. government, and Kim Philby burned the whole operation, and the Soviets got wise to it. The fact that we couldn't go and prosecute all these spies, even though we had all the evidence for it, meant that we didn't have another mechanism in our rule of law except to create the House Committee on Un-American Activities. Diana, can you just take it from there and take us into the weeds a bit on the difference between Joe McCarthy and Harry Reid?
Well, that's probably the best place to start, given that this is the premise for my column last week. Harry Reid, the execrable Harry Reid, as I call him in the column, certainly deserves our scorn for the wild statements he makes. But what Victor Davis Hanson did in his syndicated column, of course, Victor Davis Hanson being the widely respected historian, is he set up the whipping boy of Joseph McCarthy in order to convey how bad Harry Reid was. And frankly, Harry Reid is not fit to clean Joseph McCarthy's shoes, in my view. And I think the facts back that up. But
Diana, if I could just interrupt for a second.
Sure.
I've always had an affinity for functional alcoholics. And,
Nick, that's kind of repeating the same kind of cant that we've been given in terms of what Joseph McCarthy was all about. I mean, and this is what I get into in the column by Hanson. Hanson simply takes the various, buzz phrases that we have in our sort of nation's attic when we think of Joseph McCarthy, in terms of lurid allegations. My favorite is the very famous denunciation by the Army Counsel, Joseph Welch, whom, strangely enough and sadly enough, Victor Hanson actually identifies as Robert Welch in his column, who was the founder of one of the founders of the John Birch movement. But the point is that these are just buzz phrases that come at us, whether it's the alcoholism, whether it is the no decency, which actually was a complete fraud in the sense that this was supposed to have been a point at which Joseph McCarthy outed a young lawyer as a former member of a communist front, the National Lawyers Guild. Well, the fact of the matter was Welch outed the man, his associate, his assistant, in the New York Times almost a couple of months earlier in terms of saying that, yes, he confirmed that he had actually dismissed this fellow, his name was Frederick Fisher, from this work that he was doing because of his former membership in the National Lawyers Guild.
You know, Diana, we've completely run out of time. I just have to say, though, I can't overstate how much it gets me when MSNBC pundits misuse the term McCarthy, because you've done us a great service. The facts of history do bear out a very different story, and anything that can be done to replace the connotations that have been so exploited with actual facts is a good thing to me. Diana West, author of Death of a Grown-Up and American Betrayal. And folks, next up, we've got former original member of the Delta Force, General Jerry Boykin. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.